So since we don't have a quorum, let's just talk a little bit about the schedule here. We're going to hear Representative Moran's bill today, and we're going to have an informational hearing on my bill because some of my witnesses are not able to be here today. And I think I still do have... Oh, my goodness. I don't see any of them. I had someone who got up out of a sick bed to come and testify today on that bill, and I don't see him. So maybe we will... I'll just explain the bill, and we'll talk about it later over for possible inclusion. But Representative Moran, I know, is on her way. Her bill is there.
Madam Chair.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You'll need to call the meeting to order. Let's go ahead and call it to order.
Okay.
We're calling it to order. We don't have a quorum, so we can't do any legal business, but we can at least talk on the record.
Yeah, just a question, Madam Chair. The House came out last week with its revised spending targets, and this one did not fare so well in that, as far as getting any additional funding. So how does that play into the bills we've heard so far this year?
Representative Anderson, that's a perfect question. The answer is there. Oh, good. Here's Representative Moran. The answer is remains to be seen. Whether or not there apparently is some money that's available. It's not available to us specifically, but we will do our vying for our part of it. And if any of you want to weigh in on that, on any of the bills that are important to you, I'm happy to have your help. But at the moment, we did not have an official target. That's absolutely correct. It's very disappointing to me, but that's where we are. Representative Moran, do you want to go ahead and present your bill? And we don't have a quorum yet. Maybe I can ask Matt, could I ask you, could you try to help us round up some of the rest of our members? Thank you. I know people are coming back from the floor session, but we have to be out of here. What time?
We have to be out of here at like 2:00.
At 2:00, we need to be done. We'll be done. Representative Moran, we didn't complete your bill before, and you're back before us. Welcome back to the committee. We can't officially act, but we might as well get started with the discussion.
Okay. Well, thank you, Madam Chair, for creating a space for us to come back and hear this bill today. I don't know if I need to give a summary of the bill.
Why don't you
do
that?
It's really about due process in allowing a renter who has been evicted their time in court before a UD is placed on their public record. And so I don't know if we have any more questions around it, but I do have Mr. Giles here who can respond to any questions or concerns that we may have going forward.
Welcome to the committee. Did you want to start any particular point on the bill?
So, Madam Chair, I think there were a couple of concerns or questions as we were leaving out on last Friday.
Okay.
And so if we can bring some relief or comfort to those questions, I hope is that we can do this today. Yes.
Madam Chair. Members.
Yes, welcome to the committee, and you just reintroduce yourself, right, please.
I am Metric Giles. I'm the director with the Community Stabilization Project. I would like to start with some clarifying and some transparency that's related to this bill. So in order to do that, I need to ask a question to the members here, if that's permitted.
You can always ask, and we can see if members want to respond. There's nothing prohibited by you asking for clarification.
What I would really like to know, is there any members that is either a current renter or a past renter that is sitting on the committee?
Okay, members, we're just asked if we want to voluntarily say if we have ever been renters. I believe that's the thing.
That's,
and
that's
so to raise your hands.
Questions.
Anybody ever been a renter? Looks like you've got most of us here.
And I would also like to ask that of the attendance here, if I could ask that. If I could just have a show of hands real quick.
People in the audience? Anybody in the audience been renters? Okay. Looks like we have a room full of renters or former renters.
And the reason I ask that question is to perception from the questions that was asked, that it kind of elevated or de-elevated the renters to be second-class citizens, to be criminals, to be low-life people. You know, that's kind of like how I receive the questions, because most of the questions was not about justice, but about these people who are tenants and renters being kind of like a problem. And just based on what I'm seeing in the room, renters deserve as much of equal rights and equity as any other people in the housing population of Minnesota. So I just want to make sure that we all start on that page here today, if we can. Then I'm going to start from the back piece of the concern of the 3 years that we are asking for of expungement.
Okay. Go ahead.
I have, after I left here, I thought about what other systems do we have that ask for second chances for people. And one of the biggest systems processes is that system of bankruptcy. That system of bankruptcy that probably some people in this room have actually experienced actually has a limit to their accountability and consequences. And I'm thinking that in the same way, a tenant is actually guilty, the ruling is found in favor of the landlord. We don't know what the total circumstances of those tenants are. Same way we don't know what the total circumstances of the people who have filed bankruptcy. But they are given a second chance at a certain amount of time. The present standing of an eviction order, it's a lifetime penalty that is incurred. We are asking that tenants, just like all the other systems, that they do not have to have a lifetime of a penalty against them. Those penalties, when they try to find housing, when they try to find employment, when they're trying to apply for credit, many, many things. The other piece of that is how all the other interrelated systems that bills and policies that you guys are working on here, how this bill interacts with that bill, the homeless bill, the employment bill, all those things. If a person, education, if a person do not have a home to live in, then it's hard to do those other systems. And right now, that eviction order is having that type of impact on tenants when they're trying to find housing. The other two things we're asking for, pretty common sense as far as when we talk about justice and housing. The due process. In any place else other than with the tenant landlord, I think we recognize due process. That a person is innocent until found guilty. In the state of Minnesota, a tenant is directly impacted the minute the landlord files the eviction order. It goes on the public records. I'm hoping we can change that in the state of Minnesota. Our bill also says very clearly, only when the tenant, when the ruling is found in favor of the tenant, will the judge say that this will not be put on the public record. The reality of this is, when we talk about expungement, if we recognize these two practices, there is no expungement that has to be expunged. There is nothing, no public record that has to be expunged. There is no cost to anyone. The landlord has already paid a cost to put that on to bring the tenant to court. So, real clearly, when the landlord files the eviction order, if it's not put on the public record, then there is no expungement that has to happen at that point in time. if the judge says, in this ruling in favor of the tenant, there will not be a public record, eviction order record made. There will be a court record, but there will be no public record, and there will be no expenses. Again, there is no expungement. If the ruling is in favor of the landlord and the case is closed, the judge will say this ruling will be made part of the eviction order, will be made part of the public record, and the tenant will incur any other expenses. Very clearly, that's what we're saying today. If there's any questions, I'm very happy to answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Miles. Any questions from committee members? Go ahead. Excuse me. Go right ahead. Sorry, I'm so busy. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Moran, I have a question for you. Have you been working with Representative Moline on her bill with expungement? Because she has a much larger bill, and there's components in that bill that basically do the exact same thing as this, but in a little bit different way that kind of gets to the issue maybe more succinctly and a little more efficiently. Have you had conversations with her?
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, I looked at her bill that she was carrying last week, and what is a part of her bill, in my mind, and looking at it, is currently what's already in law. I didn't see what it did any different that was currently already in law that gives the judge the discretion at his discretion, to offer an expungement in the case that a tenant has been found clear of any misdeeds.
Hello, Neil. Do you have more follow-up?
I believe her bill says that it has to be in a separate hearing, so that would be the difference. The current law is it has to be a separate hearing, and her bill, would be without a separate hearing. So, I mean, it gets to the heart of what you're trying to do, but it does it in a much more expedient way, and I think it conforms a little bit better to what you're actually trying to accomplish.
Madam Chair, Representative Moran, the difference is we're taking it up to, we're being a little bit more preventive of even having a UD on public record until after that tenant has gone to court. Currently, as soon as a landlord sent out an eviction notice, that UD is automatically becomes public record on that tenant. In our acts, that exception at the end is part of the acts, but we're also looking at the front end of not having a UD made public record until after the tenant has gone to court. It's like, you know, you're innocent until proven guilty.
Thank you so much.
Currently, you are guilty based on the landlord action of an eviction, right? And we're saying due process has not taken place yet.
I'm sorry, I was just getting a little more counsel on the differences between the two bills.
Representative O'Neill.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Madam Chair.
It's okay. I want you to have all the information you need.
Thank you. It would just seem that maybe we should try that. In my mind, I'm thinking maybe we should just try what she's doing first, because she's doing a much larger expungement bill, and kind of see how that works and plays out in the court. And then maybe if that doesn't work the way it's expected to work, then maybe come back with something like this. But in my mind, I think that bill has been really worked with, but it went through a working group. It had all the parties at the table. It was very thoroughly vetted. It's been worked through by both parties. It's a bipartisan bill, and this is not. And so I have strong concerns about this bill moving forward, that it hasn't had the vetting, it hasn't had the work, it hasn't had the bipartisanship as her bill has. And so I have concerns this one moving forward for those reasons. I would hope that we would let that go through first and see how that plays out. So maybe further conversations with her would be helpful.
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative.
Representative Moran.
I've heard the same thing, that it has gone through a vetting process, that all the those who needs to be there, the stakeholders who need to be there, were there. But in my mind, in the mind of Community Stabilization Project, who has been working with tenants and have seen the problem of UDs becoming a barrier to them in relationship to being able to find housing later down the road, that has come, you know, that can lead to homelessness, can lead to individuals find themselves at the beckons of slumlords, is that there's a part that's missing from the McLean Champion bill, which really looks at the due process of a person being innocent before going to court. And in a big way, I think this is a complement to that bill.
Mr. Giles, did you
yes, Madam Chair, members, I would like any of the members here explain to me why in this circumstance a person would have a problem with due process of a person being innocent until found guilty. As someone can explain why tenants go to court and are negatively impacted before they have a hearing, why that is acceptable in the state of Minnesota. Can please someone explain that to me?
Representative Herta raised his hand. Is there any response to this question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, maybe some of the comments I have to make might center around that question you just posed. But earlier you had made a comparison or stated that there's this pervasiveness that renters are second-class citizens. And, you know, maybe if you're an appellate in a situation like this, it would be reasonable to presume that you feel that way. But, you know, the issue of renter versus landlords, the parties in a contract with regard to renting, they share a certain bundle of rights that comes with property and property rights in our nation. And some of those, you know, I can't list them all because I don't any longer remember them all, but the things that you share in common are the right to privacy, the right of occupancy, the right of term of tenancy, to be secure in your personal place, possessions from unlawful search and seizure. You're subject to police powers. But where it starts to change a little bit is that the landlord or the owner is the fee owner of the property. Now, in exchange for an agreement in tenancy for a period of time or a term of a lease, there are certain covenants or agreements that are made between the two principals or the parties. And in those covenants are some basic things that are the mutual expectations in terms of, I agree to provide you with this space, and in return, you as the tenant, in exchange for those covenants, agree to certain terms. Now, I've heard the discussion about due process, but the process is in the terms of the agreement. I mean, that's a matter of contract law. So I guess I would ask, in what circumstances does an individual find himself facing an eviction order? Usually, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but it usually centers around non-payment of the rent or some other breach of the covenants that were agreed to specifically between the parties. So in terms of the process is laid out, I believe, in the terms of the lease, and getting an expungement of an eviction order, I think there are certainly reasons to do that, and coincidentally, I'm one of the few members of this caucus that have signed on to an expungement bill to mainstream people and get them back into society and not deny them from housing and from job advancement and job promotion. I agree with that, but with regard to the process, I think the process is being followed by those mutual covenants and agreements in that relationship that's voluntarily entered into between landlord and tenant. And so there's something that breaks down in that agreement that leads to an eviction order. It might be conduct, it might be breach of peace, you know, it might be breach of contract in terms of paying the rent. Could be several things that are included in that. So I believe the process is being followed. And the suggestion that you're innocent until proven guilty seems to suggest by its implication that people randomly get eviction orders because of any other reason other than those covenants that were specifically agreed to. So that's my response to your secondary question, and if you see it differently, until we get a quorum, I'd love to hear the response to that.
Can I respond to that?
I believe we now have a quorum, so I'm going to call the meeting officially in order.
Can I respond to that, please, Madam Chair?
Ms. Jess.
Representative. Thanks for that partial education. The total process, that the landlord does have that right to bring a tenant to court for non-payment of rent, failure to pay for non-payment of rent, for breaking rules of the rental agreement. That's the right they have. The landlord also has the right to be a responsibilities of the Minnesota Covenants Act, 504.16, that talks about inhabitability, keeping it safe, repairable, energy efficient. Those are also responsibilities that the landlord has. When the landlord violates or does not live up to those expectations, the tenant can actually withhold rent money. That's a legal process in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. A landlord can give a tenant an illegal eviction notice. The landlord can give a tenant an illegal rent increase. Mm-hmm. The landlord can actually bring the tenant to court for breaking rules of the rental agreement. As you say, that is part of the process. But that is not absolute. And that's what you're telling me, that just because the landlord can do that, it's absolute. And that's where it comes back to due process, that the tenant also has that right to have his day in court. That is not an absolute thing because the process allows the landlord to bring the tenant to court. And when the tenant comes to court, believe it or not, the ruling sometimes is in the favor of the tenant. I could give everyone here a really big lesson. A simple lesson would be on the eviction. April 1st, the landlord gives the tenant eviction notice that they must be out at the end of April. The tenant doesn't move at the end of April. The landlord takes them to court for not recognizing an eviction notice. What would that ruling be? You might know. That is an illegal eviction notice. Mm-hmm. The ruling would be in favor of the tenant. Now, in that case, why should that tenant have a eviction order on their public record? And why, when they leave there, should the tenant have an eviction order on their public record? And why should they have to pay for something that they were vindicated on? That's my question. There's many, many examples of that. So yes, there is a process, but that process has an equitable place for both the tenant and the landlord. And just because it says landlord, the landlord is not the lord of the lands. The tenant still has some equitable rights. Does that answer your question, sir?
Well, I've heard an explanation, but
that is the law.
There's certainly a difference between a notice of termination of lease. There's certainly a notice of breach of covenant or contract, whether or not that enters into a dispute at that point, and failure to remain obligated to those covenants in how what circumstances you end up in an eviction or eviction action is certainly a matter of real estate law, and I'm not pretending to suggest that every circumstance that you're talking about or that I'm talking about is just simply, you know, black and white, because obviously there is not. But most of us realize that even in contract law, when you have a disagreement, you can still disagree and you may seek civil action to resolve the difference, but that doesn't necessarily, unless prescribed by law, to withhold payment or cause other breaches in that covenant that would lead to those eviction orders. It's just like if you've ever gotten a notice from the IRS that you owe taxes, and if you disagree with it, doesn't mean you don't get to pay the taxes. The usual solution is to pay the tax and then dispute it and resolve it. Otherwise, you end up with all of the other consequences that are available as a remedy to the tax collector, which includes you know, levy, seizure, penalties, interest, all of that stuff. So, I mean, I don't want to split hairs about it, and I hope that you don't get the idea that I'm trying to. I'm just finding it difficult oftentimes to suggest that the people who own the property and are providing a product and a service in the market and providing shelter for individuals are characterized as being the demons in this type of legislation.
Wow.
Okay, excuse me. Representative Fisher, you had a question?
A little bit more of a statement to try to get at things here, and I appreciate what I'm hearing around the table. And one of the things as I'm taking a look at this, you know, particularly the key section here on Section 1, Subdivision 2, Number 1, is where we're looking in favor of the, you know, if things are in favor of the tenant, that they not be recorded. And there's several reasons I'm focusing on this, is that most of us realize that most of the people that are in business are doing the right thing and treating their tenants in the right way. But where this is being driven is that there is still, as in any business, as in any entity, you always have a small fraction that abuse what's occurring. And this does happen, and unfortunately where it does seem to have a tendency of happening more often are those that are in populations that are at disadvantage or very low income. And I've seen just in the work that we've done in our agency many times where people are in, I just can't believe the situations that they're living in where they're infested with bed bugs and roaches and everything, the plumbing's leaking, and they want to do something about it, and they say, well, if I complain anymore, the landlord's going to throw me out or throw an unlawful detainer on me. And it's very frustrating, and it's not everybody, but it's a small minority. And what happens is it becomes an imbalance in the power situation. What happens then is, because if that person leaves, that landlord can provide a situation where it's almost impossible for that tenant then to get a decent place to live elsewhere. And this is where we're trying to hit at in these type of situations. And it's real critical. And I saw a lot of that happen during the housing crisis. Is there were situations that went as far as where, and it's not quite the same situation here, but the situation was so far as where the landlords were not paying the money to the company that was the mortgage company. They had all these notices that they were going to be evicting the people, and they weren't telling the tenants but collecting the rent. And 10 days before the property was going to be foreclosed on, all of a sudden they saw this sheriff's notice go up saying, you've got to be out of here. And here are these people all of a sudden about to be homeless who've been doing the right thing. At the same time, the landlord is not going to provide them a reference to get another place. So there are instances where, and it's not the majority of the people, this is a minority, but we have to make sure that we have something in place to help protect the people who are trying to do the right thing and make sure that they're not being unfairly penalized when they're in very difficult situations.
I think it's Representative Green. Oh, Representative Green, then Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Moran and Mr. Giles, I know that we had spoke before, and some of the concerns that I had, I still have, because, you know, they. I agree that I think what you're really looking for is part of the Moline bill, and And I recognize the fact that there are landlords that are bad, but there's a lot of good ones too, and what you're going to do is lump them all into one. Mm-hmm. And I'll share my concerns with you again that I had before, and that is that if these laws go into effect, and you're going to see way more scrutiny of landlords before they even let anybody in. We already have a problem with trying to find housing. And now, if the landlord knows that eventually he's going to be in court over this, he's going to look at tenants in maybe a more scrutinizing way. And you talk about due process. We do have due process, and it's slow. And sometimes our court systems work slow, like government. And that's not always a bad thing. Sometimes it is, but it's not always. And so when I see these and you put more restrictions on, I'm afraid this is going to come back and bite you on the back end when you have people out there who are really in need of a home but now won't be able to get one. So I hope that you're really thinking this through, and maybe it would be a good idea for you to take the win you've got in the other bill and then come back at this another time when it's been worked out a little more. So,
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I thank you for testifying. I'm just trying to clear up a couple things that I'm not totally up to speed on. And I think what you're talking about in the due process thing is this first initial eviction notice, correct? Okay. And so the process is followed. That goes to a court hearing. And let's say the tenant wins that hearing. So you're telling me that eviction notice is not taken off the record unless the tenant goes for a motion to have that taken off. Is that correct?
Correct.
Mr. Giles?
Madam Chair, that is correct, and at a cost.
That's my next question. What would be the approximate cost of doing something like that?
Mr. Giles?
Madam Chair, I really actually do not know the cost. Total cost, but what I do know, most tenants leave the court without knowing that they need to ask for that. They do not even know that, and then they go to rent a unit, and that's when they find out that they have an eviction order, because they thought they won that day in court. It was a partial win, not a long-term win.
So again, Madam Chair, if I could ask another question. Again, in the scenario, the tenant wins this court case, does that mean they can stay in their home then, or do they usually leave when that happens? What happens if they win the case and want to stay in that apartment or rental?
Mr. Giles.
Madam Chair, Representative, in most cases, a win. In the majority, yes, they get to stay in that home. It has been found in favor of the tenant, the eviction order, the non-payment of rent, the breaking rules of the rental agreement, and they usually get to stay there. Sometimes they can have a win and have a agreement that has been mediated.
Okay. I believe Representative Isaacson. Oh, wait a minute. I think we have some information on court costs. Ms. Hendricks can answer your question, Representative Anderson.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. The fiscal note from the Supreme Court, it seems that the motion fee for expungement would be $100 and then a filing fee of $310. $310, correct.
So we're talking about a $410 cost. Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Thank you. Representative Isaacson? Oh, excuse me. Was there Representative Isaacson?
No, thank you.
You good? Representative Green?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to be clear to your question, and somebody who knows can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that the expungement that we're talking about, if they win the case, the section in Representative Moline's bill, House File 3576, addresses that and says that the judge can expunge it at that time. So if they win the case, it can be taken off right at that time. There doesn't have to be a separate hearing anymore. So.
Okay, so we have the bill before us, and Mr. Giles, Representative Moran, you decide if you, Mr. Giles, both want to make a comment. I'd like to move. We have one more bill to be heard today, so
quick comment,
Mr. Giles,
please, Madam Chair. This, for clarification, is not an anti-landlord bill, not at all. That needs to be clarified. And what we're saying, that on what Representative Green just said, that the judge can say that. We're saying that we want it to be part of court proceedings, that it's a mandate that if the tenant wins, they go away there free of a eviction order on their public record and the cost that it will of the expenses of that $410. We're saying that that tenant deserves that to happen when they leave court if they're vindicated. Not maybe it might happen, because usually it does not happen in most cases.
Thank you. And I, Representative Moran, did you have final comments?
So I would just close by saying, and I'm going to repeat, this is not a bill about landlords are bad or tenants are bad. It's not about that. It is really about allowing the process to happen in court and not having that UD, that initial UD at the moment the landlord files an eviction notice. That notice goes on, that UD goes on to that tenant's public record. At that moment, the court date is 10, 12 days later. But at that moment, that record has impacted that tenant's life. And we're saying it should not happen at that moment. It should happen at the time they go to court. And that is part of the process that we would like to see a part of this tenant-landlord agreement happen at that time.
Okay. I think you've done a really good job of explaining the differences, and especially between this bill and the previous bill. This requires that there not be a problem for the tenant right away. The other one is a maybe. So, members, unless there's any further discussion, this bill will go to civil law, where these civil issues will be discussed more, I can promise you. Representative Hertog?
Madam Chair, I think we have a quorum. You can call the meeting to order.
I did already.
You did?
Yes, I did.
I was so absorbed in thinking about the issue.
I know.
Sorry.
You were doing a really good job of thinking about it.
All right, thank you.
Okay, so, members, the bill, House File 2251, is before us, and it will be the motion is to re-refer it to the Committee on Civil Law. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no?
No.
The motion prevails, and the bill does go forward to civil law.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative.
Do I have someone who could move the minutes for me? Representative Mesa?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Okay. We have two of them, so are you moving the March 12th and the March 10th?
I'm a team player. I'll do
that. All right. Okay. So the March 10th and 12th minutes have been moved. Are there any additions or questions about the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
The minutes are approved.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move my bill 2879 be recommended to pass, and we don't recommend passage. Just be referred to our own possible omnibus bill.
So it would be laid over, is what you're saying?
It would be laid over, yes. And Mr. Chairman and committee members, I just want to tell you ahead of time, there have been a little bit of illness going around, and my witnesses who are here today, one of them was here earlier, and then I think we've had to leave. And so I'm not going to actually ask for a vote on this today, because I really do want you to hear the firsthand testimony, but we wouldn't be voting on it anyway. We'd be laying it over. But I do want you to just get a little bit of an indication of what's going on with this bill and share with you some testimony that I can provide myself. And we have some written testimony as well. So, members, this bill deals with the situation where I think it was kind of building on what Representative Fisher was talking about earlier. Sometimes renters are going out into the housing market and they're finding property that is infested with certain kinds of pests. Could be roaches, could be bed bugs, could be a number of different things. I can tell you that in my city we have had in some of our housing a real big problem with bed bugs, and I'm not sure if that's happening in many other parts of the city, but it's happening all over the world, and I see a couple people shaking their heads yes. It doesn't have to do with people being clean or not clean in their housing. It has to do with you can travel and have your suitcase set down in a Florida hotel that has an infestation of bed bugs, maybe not known even to the management. You come back and you're all of a sudden you're going to have an infestation. In some of our other housing, there's lots of problems with roaches and so on. And the issue that's been brought to me is that the problem of the kind of treatment that is brought by the property owner to the tenant. Sometimes there's very little information given to the tenant. They're ordered, in the case of public housing and other kinds of housing, they're ordered to have all of their property taken out of cupboards, for example, and set 3 feet away from the cupboards. And it's a really big requirement. And sometimes when you have little apartments with children and so on, it can be very difficult. Or one of the groups of people that have talked to me most about this is the elderly and persons with disabilities who've had really difficulty being able to even comply with what is required to move their property so that it can be treated by the types of chemicals that are being used. The other issue is that people don't know they don't know what they're being treated with. They don't know what the impact is of the chemical that's being used. And one of the testifiers today would have talked about the fact that, except for the fact that some tenants were concerned about the type of, they wanted to know what the chemical treatment was going to be. And when they discovered it, it turns out that it was not an allowed treatment. It would actually have been toxic to them. And they only were able to discover that by checking with a hotline and finding out that it's no longer even on the EPA's approved standards for chemical treatment. So I want to mention that to you. I'm going to have passed out to you a letter from one of the individuals who could not be here today, who's the president of one of the high-rise buildings in my district. And Matt'll come back and pass that out to you. And you can look at it. And the concerns he had are about proper notification, and the fact that there are some other technologies available. If you look at the very last part of the bill, in addition to the notice and the information about, you know, what is the health impact or what is the safety impact of the product that's being proposed by the property owner to treat the infestation, what I want to do in the very last section is to appropriate some dollars for heating units that would actually kill bed bugs in a more efficient way than anything that we have going right now in terms of chemical treatment. Now, this is something I've worked on with my own public housing agency. It turns out that these heating agents are quite expensive, and so there are not very many of them around. I had my intern who is here, Arlen. I want to acknowledge you for all the research you did on the bed bug machines that can be used, the heating units. And the average cost that seems most efficient and that our own public housing authority, Minneapolis, thought was good, cost about $74,000 to $75,000. So they're a big investment, but they do the job, and they can be turned on in a heating unit, and if we need Arlen to come and talk more about the details of that, we can do that. But I wanted you just to know today, that's what that last page two, what the appropriation is for. I don't have a number in there because, again, this particular committee does not at this point have any, we don't have dollars available in this committee, but should some become available, we would want to see if that couldn't be paid for. Or it could possibly go to the Department of Human Services, Health and Human Services, and they may be able to pay. But I have talked with Representative Huntley about that. So, Mr. Chairman and members, that's basically what the bill is about. I'd be glad to try to answer any preliminary questions. I really am sorry that the folks who had prepared this and brought it to me couldn't be with us today. And so I'm not going to ask for a vote, but maybe I can answer preliminary questions. I can tell you I have heard from some late yesterday afternoon. I heard from one individual who said they were concerned about the five-day notice, and so I want to talk with them a little bit more and find out, you know, what would be acceptable to them right now. I believe there's only 48-hour notice for the, for example, in the public housing in my own city, and for some people that's not enough time for them to be able to contact the health authorities and the and find someone to help them move their property if they have difficulties doing that. So if 5 days isn't exactly right, it might need to be modified a bit. I'm certainly open to that, but that's what I can tell you right now.
Professor Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Clark, I'm not sure I caught what you said. You disclosed what the cost of these machines are?
Yes. Representative Hertas, Mr. Chairman, the research that was done by my intern there, about $74,000, $75,000, for the kind that's, I believe it's run with a diesel engine, and if you want to, we could have certainly asked my intern to come and provide some more testimony. He might enjoy that. He might be a little shy. I'm not sure. We could ask him. He's not shy. Would you like to hear that information?
No, I just wanted to validate that. Okay. I heard that right.
Yes.
So.
Yes, they're quite expensive, and that my understanding of how they work, they provide the heat. They sit on the ground. It's a diesel engine. It's like a trailer, and they have long tubes that go up into the various units, and we're talking about in high-rise. They have to maybe go a number, quite a few floors up, or on single up floor levels, they can go there too. But they're designed to treat all kinds of housing, and they raise the temperature to, I believe, 120, 125 degrees for a period of time. And that is lethal to bed bugs. And it's lethal in a way that chemical treatment is not. It's for people who have ever had infestation with bed bugs, I do not speak from any personal experience here, but from what I have heard from individuals, it is very, very difficult and a very painful kind of situation to be in. And for the elderly and persons with disabilities, I mean, sometimes you're talking about people who end up with pretty serious skin problems. And when you're talking about people who have elderly people in particular who might have depressed immune systems, you get a something that you scratch, a secondary infection, it can be very serious. And these are just issues of human health and, in some case, compassion, when you hear from the people who are trying to, they're trying to do everything right. There's some things that can be done in terms of encasing mattresses. You may buy a piece of furniture, or you may be given a mattress that is infested, and there's no intention to transfer, bed bugs, for example, or roaches or anything, but they may still be there. And so there's a number of different levels of treatment. But what the authorities often want to do then is they want to come in with a spray. And I want to say, if you need to do that, you need to give the tenants enough notice so that they can find out, is this a spray that is going to affect my health? People have allergies, but there's also, like, as I have mentioned, there's some sprays that have been illegally brought by probably an unknowing property owner, not realizing it's still not approved. Probably the worst thing I've heard is people who decide to take this into their own hands. They go to the hardware store, and they get a particular product that is really hazardous. It's not anything that a property owner would probably use. And they use it, and I can't remember the name of it, something like Snap. I don't know if anybody knows Snapshot. I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, it's a particularly hazardous chemical that you can buy in the hardware store, but it would never be recommended by the EPA or a landlord that knew what they were doing.
The President Clark, the letter you sent around cites the price of $85,000 each.
This is 85?
But you had a follow-up question on some Heritas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there not companies or entities in the private sector that already have this equipment, and it would be more cost-effective to provide funding or assistance with nonprofits that can assist those who need to get the service done, rather than the state owning and capitalizing the cost and maintenance and depreciation of an expensive piece of equipment like that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hurdle, if there is, I think that would be great to know about. What I'm not talking about the state. This would be local units of government. It might be your local housing authority or your local county or city.
Is it not an appropriation from state funds or general funds to?
Yes, but it's not necessarily to. Is that going to be held by the by the state? It's paid for by our state tax dollars. It's a matter of public health investment. That's exactly right.
I believe Representative Fisher has a comment he wanted to make related to this.
Working at an entity where we deal with a lot of people going out, and in the hospitality industry, there are other companies that do provide services that address it. The problem that comes in is that, number one, is on the heating. Is there are companies that can come and do heating up, but it costs several thousand dollars depending how large of an area that you're looking at to heat one small area, and if you go out from there, it expands greatly. And then, as they were talking about the chemicals, the people we've worked with say the only chemical that they found that really is 100% effective was banned a long time ago, and that was DDT. It's just that these bugs will live forever, are just about, they can go a year between feedings and still survive. And they really resist the cold well, it's just the heat, and you've got to have the heat to help kill the eggs so that you don't have a rebirth when the next generation comes out. And that's where some of the chemicals come in, is they can leave a residue that will kill the eggs when they hatch, so that when they come out of the eggs, they'll die. But and I think that's what they're trying to get at here, is that's where you've got to start leaving notices, because you've got that residue that can cause other illnesses, but that's sometimes the only way you can take care of the egg problem that comes out in the process.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. I just want to say I will promise to have the expert here next time to actually talk more about this. He can do that.
Yeah, I like that, because this is, which is kind of a strange deal. I had the same question about private companies that do that. Generally, private companies can do it a lot more efficient. And, yeah, I know it gets expensive, but this is probably going to get expensive, too. I guess some of the questions I have is, how do you define infestation? And before the landlord can know about this, people got to bring it forward. And I don't know how you would stop someone from going and buying something that's probably destructive. I know I wouldn't want to go buy chemicals and throw on my mattress, but how would you stop that? And how, you know, well, it seems to me it's going to have to be a personal responsibility issue anyway.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Green, I have no intention of stopping anybody from doing anything. What I'm trying to do, though, is try to get people resources so that they will be able to get the proper pesticides or whatever it would be, that they wouldn't be using things that are not safe. And, you know, some of this is just a matter of people, yes, the personal responsibility. It could even possibly be something that people would put in the lease. I'm not requiring that in this bill, but if you have a problem, please notify me. Some landlords may have that in their leases. I don't know, but I think, you know, helping tenants know that there is a resource would be a really wise thing for most any property owners to do. I think in public housing, there is more often the because it might be many units, maybe more than, although some private landlords have many, many units too. There is, I think, a request or a requirement that you notify the landlord of any problems in the apartment or in the housing that people live in. Everything from, you know, leaky faucets and other damages that might show up, to including infestations. This bill doesn't speak to any thing like that. If you want to think about that, that could be a different bill, I guess.
Yeah. You had a follow-up first?
And I don't want you to think I'm attacking you. I'm just, these things are going through my mind here that, I do know bed bugs can spread a lot of different ways. Apparently, you can even, if they're on someone's book that they've had, that and you rented from the library, it can come in. You know, and so that tells me that there's bed bugs in libraries and hotel rooms and a lot of different places. And so I'm just kind of concerned two things. One, taking business away from private entities that are, you know, trying to hang on and make a living off of this stuff. And if we hurt those businesses, will that actually reduce the number of people out there doing it? But, you know, just some questions that were going through my mind.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify on this bill? Seeing none.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I would just say, if there is anyone who has concerns, and I appreciate hearing from the committee, please come and see me, because I want to make sure this is a really useful bill going forward. And if there's some changes to be made, I'd like to bring that to the committee the next time. So thank you very much, committee members.
Bill will be laid over. We have no other business. Do you want to resume the chair, Representative Clark? Okay.
Thank you, Representative Blatt. I think the only other thing is to say that we will be having a committee meeting next Monday. Other than that, there's no more business before the committee today, so the meeting is adjourned.